to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On today's program, we're going to be interviewing Susie Gottsegere, one of our special people living here in Madison County. Susie is a certified specialist of wine. She's a certified culinary professional. She's also the director of Seasonal School of Culinary Arts, with offices or locations in Ithaca, New York, in Sonoma, California, Asheville, North Carolina, and Paris. So, welcome, Susie.
Thank you very much, Chuck. It's a great pleasure to be here today.
Well, everybody on the program here may not know who you are and who your family is here in Madison County, because a lot of our listeners are from way outside this area. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in doing the kinds of things that you do?
Very broad invitation. Thank you very much. I'll try not to put my foot in my mouth too many times. It's a long story, and it started here for me. It started in Madison County. I was born here in Asheville and raised just north of Asheville, 50 miles north to be exact, in the rural, most rural part of Madison County you can possibly imagine. And this is if you're from elsewhere in the world and you've seen Deliverance, it's that kind of setting.
Oh my goodness.
However, the neighbors are much more friendly, or they are now. There were times at the beginning of my life when my parents had just moved here from the north. So I was native, but they were not, which made me sort of a crossbreed to begin with. There were times when it was not quite taken for granted that they were quite one of everybody, until the banjo came out a few times and square dancing became a way of life. And my parents had decided to come to this area from Ithaca, New York, outside of Doylestown, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to live the way the old timers did here in the mountains. They came for the music and they came for this style of life, and they settled right into living without electricity or running water or television or radio or telephone or any of the modern conveniences, just at a time when everybody local was sort of getting away from that style of life and roads were becoming paved and people were moving off to work in town.
Now, let me see if I understand this. Your parents came from, these are college-educated, university-educated people, right?
This is true, yes.
And where was this?
Ithaca, New York, Cornell University. They were both students there. Okay. My mother's father was dean of men there. Mom was actually at Brooklyn School of Art post-Cornell, and they left that lifestyle and came directly down to a totally different focus.
Did your parents ever talk to you about what a culture shock it had to be coming from the city to this rural mountain areas of North Carolina?
Well, you know, they embraced it wholeheartedly, and they never looked back. Even my mother, who was raised completely differently, never looked back. She, you know, they used corn shucks in the outhouse and all the traditional stuff, carried water. And my first culinary experience that I remember really strongly was the taste of a radish just freshly pulled from the soil, and the bite and the burn of that radish. Of course, I immediately ran to the creek to wash out my mouth because it was pretty hot. But those were wonderful early memories. So I grew up tasting garden vegetables and dirt, and with all these pure flavors. My mother didn't necessarily know what to do with them besides boil and fry like everybody else did. But that was a great basis for going on later to turn into the culinary field.
So where did you go to high school?
I went to the local public school in Shelton Laurel. That was Laurel Elementary, which was a high school at the time. And then just before it came my turn to go to high school, they built a consolidated school at Marshall. So I went to Madison High.
Is that on the island?
No, it was just up above the bypass.
Oh, okay. So that was the new place now.
Right.
Okay. All right. So after high school, do you have any specific memories about food or anything in high school?
Not particularly, no. I wasn't particularly enthralled with with that, at that time, I was more into music, and I traveled around playing with various different bands. Went to Warren Wilson College because I could be in the Asheville area and keep working with the bands I was working with at the time. I was filling in with Mark Pruitt Band sometimes when Orville Freeman was absent, which was always a great pleasure, and playing with the family band and several other folks at that time. Also with a couple of young boys who were my brothers and my age. We had a group called the Cott Lewis Offspring String Band when we were teenagers. And then I went on to tour with Eddie and Martha Adcock and Talk of the Town, based out of Charlottesville, Virginia, and Nashville, and we crisscrossed the U.S. several times and went to France a couple of times with that band, actually. And that's when I started turning my eyes towards the culinary field and towards wine in particular.
Well, what kinds of things did you run into in Paris that got you interested in the food and wine thing?
Food and wine were paramount on everybody's mind. It's all everybody talked about. You know, during one meal, you talk about what you're going to eat during the next meal and various other meals that you've had along the way. And what impressed me the most at that time was I stayed with a family in the south of France, working couple with four very small children. And they had exceedingly busy lives, but they made such incredible meals during their busy lives. And they didn't think anything of it. You know, they had herbs growing out the back door. It was in Provence, so herbs were plentiful, rosemary and thyme. And they would go out and they'd come back with a great cut of meat. They'd start the salad dressing in the morning and they'd throw in lettuce leaves when they came home and throw a fresh pork chop on the fire and sprinkle it with fresh herbs and make a tremendous meal in a few minutes, all washed down with great wines, of course. And that was the norm. And life has never been the same since.
I see. That's what gets you going. Okay, so once you determined that there were some food things in your future, what did you do about it?
Well, it's funny because I ended up spending 20 years in France following that period and traveling all over and eating my way around the most remote areas of France and then coming back home and trying things out in the kitchen that I'd tasted. And so most of what I really learned was through trial and error and tasting. I think that the most important thing in becoming a food or wine teacher is being open to tasting and trying a lot of new things. So if you are adventurous and then come back and experiment, the sky's the limit. Yeah, I was fortunate to be in France where great ingredients were plentiful and great wines were cheap. And after a while, after two decades of playing American music in Europe, I figured it was time to bring something of that back to where I came from. So I started the culinary school in Asheville actually 11 years ago. This is the Seasonal School of Culinary Arts, and we have summer sessions in Asheville, autumn sessions in Ithaca, winter sessions in Sonoma, and spring sessions in Paris. So actually the next one coming up is going to be in Sonoma, December 2nd through 5th. I'm skipping Ithaca this year because I've already been there. So December 2nd through 5th in Sonoma, and that is going to be a wonderful experience. There's so many wonderful vineyards out there and so many cheeses and so many olive orchards and, of course, the oysters on the coast. And
you're making me hungry just listening to this.
A very varied climate, kind of somewhat like our Madison County here.
Okay, so you've led us through the little trip of how you got into this wonderful field of culinary arts and wines. What are the events coming up over the next year, or do you have that much information ahead of time?
Yes, well, as I said, Sonoma is the beginning of December. Paris will be in the springtime. I generally take the trip in June. That's not set in stone yet. It might possibly be in May, depending on what I find of interest at that time of year. And there are always hundreds and hundreds of choices. Sometimes I take students out to Monet's Garden in Giverny, and we bicycle along the Seine and have... And then I take people to wine caves, sometimes under the Louvre. There are wine cellars to be visited. And, of course, to restaurants in Paris. And one year we did the Dîner en Blanc, which is a huge white picnic where everyone comes dressed in white. All the decorations are in white. You bring white asparagus and white wine, white candles, white flowers. And the setting is usually in front of some fabulous chateau by candlelight. And it's another one of the many things that can be experienced. And
just so our radio audience knows, what kind of people typically attend your classes like that?
any and everything. I take people from all walks of life. I've had 13-year-olds and 87-year-olds and everything in between, professionals and newbies and newly married couples and newly divorced couples who are looking to for a new lease on life, and women who have been cooking for decades and just want fresh inspiration, mother-daughter teams, father-son teams, and everything in between.
Well, I think it's important for a radio audience to note that it's really not just for chefs. I thought when you were first talking about this, this is for chefs or chef wannabes, but clearly it's for just anybody who's interested in food and wines.
It's intensive week-long experiences for people who can't necessarily afford a culinary school, either time or monetarily. So I cram as much as possible into any given week.
Okay, so if John Q. American would want to sign up for your event out in California, that'd be a week-long event.
Mm-hmm.
And so how much of my pocketbook would I lose in weight on being able to do that?
Apart from Asheville, which is a full week long, the other sessions are generally 4 or 5 days, and they run 1,200. The Asheville session is 1,500 at current time. And the Asheville session generally has a lineup of 20 to 30 different chefs and beverage experts throughout the week. So it's not one person's dogma. It's really a large overview of different insights, different experiences, different approaches to cooking and drinking.
Wow, that's impressive that you could have that many different chefs talking to these people and showing them different things. That's really quite a broad experience of tasting and cooking. At this point in time, Susie, we're going to take a break for a commercial, and we will be right back, folks, so hang on.
The sponsor for today's program is Bubba's Beer Batter Mix. In a recent radio survey of our listeners, we learned that quite a few are beer batter fans who listen to our program. Nothing tastes better than a good piece of Ivy River catfish fillet dipped in beer batter and deep fried in bear grease. Bubba has raised the bar for good mountain cuisine. He developed a beer batter mix that will cause your taste buds to shout and sing. Next time you have a friend over for a mountain treat, serve up a catfish fillet fried in Bubba's beer batter mix. The ingredients are Bubba's family secret, but after a few beers last spring after turkey season, Bubba let it slip that his special beer batter mix contains wild ramps, ginseng powder, and some other exotic things he found growing near his farm. Bubba also sells a 1-gallon tin of bear grease for those who want the very best cooking experience. Bubba's Beer Batter Mix and Bubba's Bear Grease are special products made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy a bag of Bubba's Beer Batter Mix and a gallon tin of Bubba's Bear Grease today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, folks. We've been talking with Susie Gottsigeray, Certified Specialist of Wine, Certified Culinary Professional, and Director of the Seasonal School of Culinary Arts with locations in Ithaca, New York, Sonoma, California, Asheville, North Carolina, and Paris. Let's pick up where we left off on talking about wines and foods and how some of the food pairing things take place and how you approach all of this.
Well, this is a very vast subject and somewhat subjective. I have my own particular preferences, which may not be the next person's, and I would say that my preferences have certainly been influenced by the 20 years I lived in France and also by the rest of my life here in Madison County and the fresh produce that we find here. So that's a combination of vegetables and pork, of course, here. And in France, it was mostly goose grease and butter and all kinds of wonderful things like that. So I brought in a book that a friend sent to me from Canada, written by a fellow named François Chartier. It's called Papier et Molécules, which means taste buds and molecules. And it kind of parallels the idea of molecular gastronomy, which was a term coined by largely by Hervé Tisse, who's a French chemist and who has been an inspiration to the greatest chefs around the world, such as Ferran Adrià in El Bulli in Spain, which has recently closed its doors because Ferran Adrià has taken on new interests. Hervé Tisse's development of molecular gastronomy and then after that, a new science that he calls note-by-note cooking, which isolates various flavor components and combines them as you would combine notes to form a chord of music. And then he combines those components, once combined in a dish, to form a meal, which would then form a banquet, much as you would combine chords to form a song or a symphony. Anyway, parallel with this is the idea of the pairing certain molecules that are found in wine with certain molecules that are found in food. So I like to call that, as a parallel to molecular gastronomy, molecular analogy, right? We think perhaps of mint pairing with Sauvignon Blanc or curry, maple syrup, caramel flavors with Sauterne or a vin jaune, a yellow wine from the Jura, which is between France and Germany, dried figs and sherry, or really, really tasty meats with oaky wines, Gewürztraminer with ginger or lychee, as Gewürz has those notes in it, cloves and Zinfandel or Garnacha or Tempranillo, rosemary or lavender with Muscat or Gewürztraminer or Riesling, saffron with Chardonnay, Sherry or Muscat, cinnamon, which is a hot, sensual sort of a flavor, with oaky wines or sweet whites, capsaicin, the hot pepper element, with a Viognier or a Semillon Blanc or a Bandol Rosé, and cold flavors such as green apple, cucumber, mint, and eucalyptus with Sauvignon Blanc or Alburino or something of that nature. When we're looking at wine and food pairing components, we're thinking about amplitude or intensity, taste, which encompasses aromas and flavors, textures, which are expressed often in tannins and fats, the perception of alcohol on the tongue, which has to do with the amount of sugar in the wine often, the heat and spiciness, the surface temperature of the wines, that makes a difference too, and the psychosocial factors such as people pairing champagne with caviar, for instance, which might not necessarily be the best pairing in the world, in that the elements in caviar tend to sort of cancel out some of the flavors of the champagne, but historically they've gone together. Typically, you would want to pair spicy foods with acidic off-dry wines, such as Riesling or Chenin Blanc. You'd want to pair bitter foods with wines with residual sugars. You'd want to pair fatty foods, which bind tannins and make them less perceptible, with either tannic red wines or high acidic whites. You'd want to combine salty foods, salt diminishing the perception of wine's tannins, with wines high in bitterness, acidity, and tannins. You'd want to pair savory foods. Here we're talking about, most people like to use the term umami, which was coined in the early 1900s. But I prefer savory as the English term.
Okay, a savory food would be?
Meats and salt-cured sausages, salty cheeses, sun-dried tomatoes. You'd want to pair savory foods with a really nice tannic Bordeaux. And you would not want to pair oak-aged wines with bitter foods such as green vegetables, spinach, or broccoli rabe, because that would be just over-the-top bitterness. Sweet wines diminish the perception of flavors, so you would want to pair sweet foods with wines of a higher level of sweetness. You would use herbs to enhance herbaceous wines such as Sauvignon Blanc. Pair smoked foods with Riesling, which has a floral aroma. And high acidic wines pair with almost anything, particularly with the savory, bitter, or acid foods. Here's another thing that you might think about. You can use verjus, which is the juice of unripe fresh grapes, or citrus, instead of vinegar to balance out foods. It's less likely to overpower than the vinegar is. And thinking of various foods that are difficult to pair, historically difficult to pair with wine, such as asparagus or artichokes, these foods contain a component called cinnarin, which can be balanced out with salt and acidity. So in order to better pair with wines, if you add a bit of salt or citrus or verjus to that, that makes it more palatable. And then high acid wines such as Sauvignon Blanc or Barbera go well with a goat cheese, with high acid foods, or with a tomato sauce, for instance. So basic guidelines for wine and food pairings to be successful is neither one nor the other should overpower the other in intensity. And ideally, both food and wine would enhance and transform each other into a wonderful symbiotic relationship.
You had mentioned in some of your food pairings there's something called verjus. I know that in the past, we've done a great deal of research here with our vineyard with respect to potential markets for things for mm-hmm. these muscadines that we grow. A muscadine verjus, I think, would be just a clever new product. But most people have no idea what that is in the radio audience. That's really the juice of unripe grapes. And how does it come to you as a chef? Does it come in a jar, a barrel, or how?
You can buy it in a bottle like vinegar.
Oh, okay.
It could be used as a substitute for vinegar, essentially.
It's high acid liquid, right?
But a little bit less chemical tasting, perhaps, than vinegar can sometimes be. Okay. And because it is a little closer to the wine itself, it's a nice segue from ingredient to accompaniment.
Oh, okay. Great.
Here's one element that the French think of a lot. They tend to match wines from one area to the cuisines of that area, which is a reflection of terroir. Terroir, of course, being the earth and which climate in which grapes are grown or food is grown. And here's an interesting thought that my son brought up recently in his studies. The more we eat food or drink wine from a certain area, the more chemical elements from that area we have in our body, and the more we tend to resonate with that kind of ingredient or that kind of wine. This is food for thought. I haven't experimented much with that, but it's an interesting concept. A more modern proposition, of course, Americans are less rigid about what they pair with what in general, and a lot of people will say any wine pairs with any food based on the customer's preference. And I actually really prefer that approach because everyone has different tastes.
Sure.
Everyone has different references. And essentially, it's up to what you like.
I had made some observation on this some some years ago. I began doing cruise ship lectures on wine regions of the world. I also taught wine etiquette. I wrote a book on wine etiquette. And my experience has been that most Americans, and I'm saying this as a general category of general Americans, most Americans really don't know how their nose works. They really don't know how their tongue works. We're the country of fast foods, you know, throw the groceries down the throat and get on to the next activity. But when I go to Europe and other countries around the world traveling, I see these people sit down and actually spend an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours having lunch. And enjoy every single bite, every sip of coffee, every drink of wine. They just enjoy it. And Americans, for the most part, are not like that.
Oh, very much so. Taste references are different depending on your country of origin. Generally, of course, there are different products and different habits. I think that we as Americans biggest drawback is that we haven't really had taste education. French children grow up with taste education as part of their daily diet, so to speak. And also, we have very little imagination as human beings. So we can only count so far and remember so far. So in considering the various taste options and how we define tastes and odors and flavors, you know, we've been taught that there are four basic flavors, but there are so many more than that. It's just because we can only count to four or five that we define four basic flavors. It's like the seven seas and the seven wonders of the world. We can't count beyond that, so we don't go beyond that because we can't remember it. But if you think about it, there's so much more than sweet, salty, bitter, and sour. You know, there's pungent and astringent, and then there are so many different kinds of sour and so many different kinds of bitter. You don't have to stop at the four classic elements that we've been taught in school. And flavors, aromas go way beyond that. The number of aromas that we can detect are outrageous, but we can only remember so many of them. And then in going into definition of what you taste in wines, you know this so well, you don't have to stop at fruity or floral. You can go with leathery or, dirty sock or whatever. And that's just as valid. All of those components are there.
Well, I think it's just interesting to make the observation I've had over the years of traveling to places like Japan and Australia and throughout Africa and watching the different cultures and the different foods that they have. One of the things I always got very excited about when I visit a new country for the first time is I always try to, if they have wine, I always like to try the wines. Some of it's good and some of it's on the terrible side. you know, you run into things like yak urine wine in Tibet, a place I just had to pass on that one. But I always found it interesting to try the breads, the wines, and the cheeses. To me, those are the earthy things that is common throughout most peoples. And for me, that was an enjoyable thing to look forward to. And I found some favorites over the years that we still try to buy here. It's hard to get some of it. But when you've traveled around, do you find a lot of interest when you go to countries for the first time to see what their foods are, see what their wines are?
Well, that's my main driving force.
Yeah, but do you travel just to do that, or is it a byproduct of your travel for other reasons?
It started out as a byproduct of travel for musical reasons, and then shifted into being the determining guideline. That's interesting. You mentioned wine, bread, and cheese, and of course you can throw beer into that too, because we're talking about yeasts and fermentation and mold here, and what wonderful thing that does to ingredients.
Yeah.
And I would add, this is an interesting observation. Acidity, as you know, is the reason that wine is the primary food beverage in the Western world. Water has too much of a cleansing effect, and the residual enjoyable flavors on the palate are washed away. Beer tends to be filling and doesn't typically have as much of an impact on raising the perceptions of food flavors. Whiskey and other beverages high in alcohol can anesthetize the palate and give us a perception of sweetness and heat that can be a little deceptive. But wine has a balancing acidity which causes an increase in salivation, which in turn provides more enzymes to start breaking down foods on the palate. So you could say that actually wine is, it really helps with the digestion, and that's another reason why it's a very, very healthy beverage, and we should drink more of it, right?
Right. Well, we've been talking with Susie Gottsiger-Ray, certified specialist of wine, certified culinary professional, and director of the Seasonal School of Culinary Arts in Ithaca, Sonoma, Asheville, and Paris. Susie, how could somebody get a hold of you in order to sign up for one of your wonderful sessions of Chef Worldliness?
Well, if you want to attend one of the culinary sessions, you can go to schoolofculinaryarts.org. I also coordinate a series of events called the Asheville Wine Experience, and that is AshevilleWineExperience.com. And also have a Truffle Festival, which is happening in Asheville, coming up in February. That will be February 19th through 21st, and that is AshevilleTruffle.com. And phone number would be 828-301-2792.
And email address?
You can go to School of Culinary Arts. Let's see, SSCA at SchoolofCulinaryArts.org. That's the easiest one to remember.
Okay, and the link for your email address is on there where they can contact you. Okay.
Right.
Well, super. Well, Susie, we really sincerely appreciate the time you spent with us today on the radio show. I'm sure that our radio audience is going to be enlightened, and I've certainly learned a lot by listening to some of the interesting things you've had to say. So thank you very much for coming and spending time with us on our show today.
You are so welcome. I'll see you along the wine trail.
Absolutely. We'll call that a wrap for today's session. Thank you very much for listening.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!